Once again, this is Tiffany Earle, and welcome to today's call. The topic, let me introduce it. We're speaking today on the new scholar project that we're introducing. We've been asked to create this scholar project for years, for a long time. And so I was going to bed last night, I was thinking about this. Putting this project together was really, really an amazing experience. And for a long time, we couldn't put it together, even though people begged us for it and requested it. And I want to tell you why. Before I get into the history of the creation of this project, I want to let you know that we have Penelope Milne with us and Amy Bowler. Both Penelope, before we ever offer a scholar project to you, we pilot the scholar project for a couple of years in the classroom. And Amy Bowler and her husband Kent Bowler and Penelope Milne are our trainers and the mentors who piloted this project. We kept it really, really tight like that so that we could perfect it. And of course, every project we're always adding, they're like living projects. We're continually adding things or taking away or doing what we need to do to make adjustments. The reason why this project couldn't be created 10 years ago or had to wait was because the only analogy that I could give is as if someone asked us to bake a cake, but that flour hadn't been invented yet and eggs weren't in the U.S. yet, or the right spices weren't, we didn't know how to get them out of the herbs yet to make the cake, right? Like if we wanted nutmeg in the cake. What happened is Penelope and I talked over the years, the pieces of this project were some of our focuses. And then when it was time to create this project, it was so easy because the pieces were already created. And I guess you'll understand that more as we go into the details. But it was really almost miraculous as we realized what it was that we were teaching in this project.
Can I interject something here? You talked about the pieces, and I just want to clarify really quickly. You know, I've been really talking a lot to people, attending some conferences and having rubbing shoulders with some amazing people who are teachers and curriculum writers alike. And I want to just explain that when you write curriculum, you have to have not only book content for reading, but you also have to have a direction you want to take the class. And that typically means that you have to come up with some kind of a lecture series that goes along with the class. For all of you who know The Key of Liberty, you know that the lecture series, a lot of them come out of three main books, which would be The 5,000-Year Leap, the Democracy in America, Democracy in America, Making America Actually, yes, you're right, Making America the Next Semester, and then Montesquieu's The Spirit of the Laws. So, and you can take direct content out of that and create your lectures. So the most difficult part about writing a curriculum, we call our projects because they're project-based. In the end, we hope that they come out with something very meaningful instead of something that's just, you know, they can throw away and never care about ever again, which is the big difference between our public school experiences and our project-based learning and leadership in the leadership model. So you have to have some content that you're going to put into lectures. And Tiffany has told this story before, but maybe some of you heard it. When there was a university who went to a professor in England and said, would you be interested in coming to America and being a visiting professor for a year? And he said, well, that depends. What would be expected of me? And they said, well, you know, you would be lecturing several times a week. And he said, I can't do that. I'm good. I'm good if I can come up with two lectures a year. Right, Tiffany? Because
it was like at the very most you could do like one a month or something.
Yeah. He said maybe three. Because what true liberal arts teachers know is that when they're giving a lecture, when they're delivering information to their audience, they're not reading it out of a textbook. they have spent time and effort and energy to understand a subject so well that they're able to come up with some kind of original delivery of this content. And so when Tiffany's talking about these components, what she's saying is we've spent the last 10 years coming up with content, original content, and we are taking that original content that we've come up with and putting it into this this project. So it literally is the culmination of, I would say, 12 years, wouldn't you, Tiffany, of our study and what we think a 15, 16, 17-year-old young person would need to be successful in their own self-direction. And that's why it's taken us so long, because we've been collecting information and creating content for the last 12 years for this amazing culminating project. So sorry for interrupting, but I thought that was important for them to know.
I'm glad that you added that and helped clarify that. Thank you. All right, the way that this call is going to go, because there's three of us on the call, is I'm going to be introducing and asking a question to both Melody and Amy to comment on, and then I'll add my comments and then ask the next question, just to let you know how this is going to work out. So my first question is for Amy and Melody, and we're going to start with Melody. And the question is, what is your vision of this project? What do you think happens with the kids, with our students, with our, oh my goodness, they're so yummy and delicious at this age. I love 15, 16, 17-year-olds. And so my question is, what is your vision for them? What do you think this project does for them?
Well, first of all, I want to say that 15, 16, 17-year-olds can be very delicious and wonderful, because they have so many beautiful horizons ahead for them. But I will tell you that the world does not want them to be successful. And in fact, I believe that our whole system is designed to create little robots out of them and snap and zap all the life and energy and creativity out of them at this age, because they want them so badly to conform to this world of jobs that have been created for them. Now, I'm not saying that I don't think that our children should and will want to prepare themselves for some kind of contribution to the world. This is what I think will free them to actually make their true contribution to the world. So I'm hoping, my vision for this is that they will be able to see themselves in at least cast a vision for themselves for the next 5 years, and they'll actually be able to tangibly see it. They'll be able to have the confidence and the skills and the abilities and the fearlessness it's going to take for them to create that the next 5 years for their life. And I would even like to see the next 10 years a really strong vision of that. And I can give you some examples of that from my experiences, but I'm going to wait for the next question. That's what I'm hoping of this.
Okay. And then before I go to Amy, you've given me a vision for the student. Give me a little bit of a vision for the project.
I can go ahead and go into that. The vision of the project is that we are going to equip them with vision, mission, ability, skills, and knowledge that they need to create their life with their parents and mentor from the age of 15, we're hoping 15, 16 years old, to 20-something, so that they can cast a future for themselves and say, this is where I feel I'm being led. I'm going to go down this direction, and I'm going to create everything I want, I need to around it. I can give you an example now that you're asking me that. My daughter did this project 2 years ago, and she was 16 at the time, and it's been a most miraculous experience for her, because at the beginning of the project she said, okay, I'm going to dare to dream, and I'm going to dare to look at my life for the next 5 years, which is a very scary thing for these kids to do, and it takes some emotional and spiritual direction for them to be able to really do it. She said, you know, she chose to do something that was so scary for her because she didn't believe she could do it. She said, I want to get a scholarship to the college of my choice in music. And the two things she wanted mostly is to get that scholarship and to learn Spanish. Well, actually, not learn Spanish. To go to Ecuador. Those are the two things. And then she set her whole course for that year to create that in her life. And that was huge because she had to get ready to take the ACT. And she had to think about, you know, the college of her choice. And she had to think about if she wanted to spend the next 4 years going to, or, you know, 4 years going to that college. So literally that year it took her to get into college, and then the idea that she would be in that college for 4 years is a 5-year projection. Although things have gone a little bit differently in her life since some things in our church changed as far as age-wise was concerned. She did go to Ecuador. She did learn Spanish. She did raise the money. She had to raise $4,000, and now she's fluent in Spanish, and she's just gotten a mission call to a Spanish-speaking mission. So I just feel like the whole thing is miraculous. But that's what we're hoping for them to be able to do, is have the tools that they can create a life like that.
Wonderful. Okay, Amy, what is your vision of this project? I know that Amy was on here, so let me see if I need to unmute her.
Does she have the...
She might be muted. Let me unmute her. I can do it.
Yes, speakers.
Oh. Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah.
Yes, we can hear you. Awesome, thanks. Okay, I have to add one more thing to what Anneli said, because her daughter also got that scholarship that she worked so hard for, and we don't, anyway, her daughter's an amazing example of this class. What I see for vision is very much what Anneli was saying. A lot of times we hear about people this age or even 40-year-olds needing to take time off from their life to find themselves. And I think there's a reason for that, and because there's some truth to that. And at this phase in their life, I think the youth really need a change of pace. They need a change from what they've been doing, which for a lot of them is apprentice scholar phase. But when we look at what most people end up doing when they are taking this time off to find themselves, is a lot of wandering. And a lot of without a lot of direction and not really going anywhere, and at the end of it, not any different. But what I see for the vision.
Can I say something here? I think what you're saying is we see a lot of aimlessness, even though they may be doing a ton of stuff and their plates are completely full.
Yes.
It's aimless.
Yes. Yeah, and it's full because, and I know we as parents, because I have had teenagers this age and have them this age now, and we start, the older they get, we start to get the panic feeling. They're getting older. There's this college looming, this life thing looming, and it seems like the conveyor belt starts to suck us back, like stronger than ever as parents. And so a lot of times it's us as parents that are feeling their time with all these activities, but that they didn't choose for a reason, for a vision, like you're talking about, Annelity, this 5-year purpose or even this 10-year purpose, but more like, well, what can I do this year? And that's what this project does, is it helps them get this more of a long-term vision and say, where is it that I want to do, and give them the tools so that they can have the courage to really dream and to really gain a vision for themselves. Where do I want to be in 5 years? And if that's where I want to be, and these are the abilities and skills I want to gain, then what should I do this year? How do I get there? And then because they have a personal coach, that coach can help guide them along with their parents to know those next steps to go that they need to do so that they can actually reach their goals and their vision of who they want to become. And it's more than just tangible accomplishments. It's actually characteristics, you know, who they're becoming as a person also.
Yeah, and I'd like to add to that, Amy, not only are the students going to be transformed by this, but I think the mentors are going to be transformed by this. First of all, I think this project is really going to give the mentor all the tools they need to create a project curriculum, because it basically, it's all the magic that Tiffany and I have been using to create our projects, you know. We give them all the tools to do that because the students have to have it, right?
Right.
So this the mentor is going to be given those tools also. And if the mentor is willing to pick up those tools and say, hey, I want to create something beautiful for, you know, my family, my children, my community, I think we'll see a lot more creative project-based learning going on inside.
Like,
go ahead.
And in fact, we have developed how to create a scholar project. We're not launching that this year, and maybe we'll see that next summer to really be focused on those very specific skills, right, Annelity?
Right.
I want to add something here before I move on to the next question, and it's about creativity.
I want to point this word out to everybody because the students literally will be empowered to understand their powers of creation and their sovereignty over their life. I've been reading a book by Brené Brown. One of the tools that we implement in this project are the TED Talks. I don't know, a lot of you are familiar with the TED Talks. If there are some of you listening who don't know what a TED Talk is, just go Google it and then pick one of the TED Talks on your favorite topic and start listening. Very, very innovative, amazing company that brings the strongest disruptive innovators, the strongest people in almost any field together to be able to teach the most innovative technologies in all topics. And they just give these talks. And they're free online. We use these with our students in the Edison Project. They get to watch a lot of TED Talks. So I'm going to be reading from a book given by a woman at the TED Talk named Brené Brown, and she did 12 years of research study on shame and what shame does to a person and actually how to live a wholehearted life. I want to tell you what she says about creativity because our students take responsibility for creating their lives. That's a lot about what the Edison Project is about. Brené talks about how some of her best childhood memories involved creativity. And she says, almost all of them are from the years that we lived in New Orleans in a funky pink stucco duplex a couple of blocks from Tulane University. So she says, I remember my mom and me spending hours painting wooden keychains shaped like turtles and snails and making crafts out of sequins and felt with my friends. This story, I have to warn you, is almost tragic, okay? Let me keep reading. She says, my mom also loved to sew. She made matching ship dresses that she and I wore, along with my doll, who also had her own tiny matching dress. It's so strange to me that all of these memories that involve creating are so real and textured to me. I can almost feel them and smell them. They also hold so much tender meaning. I hope that, as I read this, your mind jumped back to when you were kids, maybe with your mom doing some similar things, having moments of creation. She says, sadly, my memories of creating end around age 8 or 9. In fact, I don't have a single creativity memory after about 5th grade. I just have to be quiet, let that sink in for a minute. That was the same time that we moved from our tiny house in the Garden District to a big house in a sprawling Houston suburb. Everything seemed to change. In New Orleans, every wall in our house was covered with art done by my mom or a relative or us kids, and homemade curtains hung over every window. The art and curtains may have been out of necessity, but I remember it being beautiful. In Houston, I remember walking into some of my neighbors' houses and thinking that their living rooms looked like the lobby of a fancy hotel. There were long, heavy drapes, big sofas with matching chairs and shiny glass tables. There were plastic plants with hanging vines strategically sitting on top of armoires and dried flowers in baskets decorating the tops of tables. Strangely, everyone's lobby kind of looked the same. While the houses were all the same and fancy, the school was a different story. In New Orleans, I went to a Catholic school, and everyone looked the same, prayed the same, and for the most part, acted the same. In Houston, I started public school, which meant no more uniforms. In the new school, cute clothes counted. And not homemade cute clothes, but clothes from the mall. In New Orleans, my dad worked during the day and was a law student at night. There was always an informal and fun feel to our lives there. Once we got to Houston, he dressed up every morning and commuted to an oil and gas corporation, along with every other father in our neighborhood. Things changed, and in many ways, that move felt like a fundamental shift. My parents were launched on the accomplishments and acquisitions track, and creativity gave way to that stifling combination of fitting in and being better than, also known as comparison. I read that because it launches the realization of the importance of what we're saying here, that our students are going to be creators, that they are creators, and that we're giving them the tools to create. Let me move on to the next question. Okay. I want to talk about some of the details of what goes on during the Edison Project. And one of these is the teaching of the 6 creative powers. Now, you've heard us call them the 6 creative powers and the 7 creative powers. I'm going to take just a minute because some of you on this call haven't been with us for a lot of years and may not have learned about these creative powers. I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years ago that Melody and I focused on them and taught them. So I'm going to just quickly list them for you because this is the element that Melody and I were talking about at the beginning of what our lectures are based on. And I want to explain why sometimes we call them the 6 creative powers or the 7 creative powers. There are 6 powers, but the 7th one is synergy. So the 7th one is when we combine any set of these 6. Okay? And as everyone knows, synergy means increasing our potential by exponents. It's huge when we understand that when we combine any of these powers, then we're really unleashing our potential to do good and to be happy and to serve and to contribute. The 6 powers are authority power, which comes from position or from genuine craftsmanship. Task power, which is power over time. Material power, I'm just really giving these in a nutshell. Of course, not doing justice to these, but material power is the power over the physical world, being able to actually manipulate and use physical material and to physically make something happen after it's been spiritually created also. Relationship power, people power, personal power is power over self, and knowledge power, light, knowledge, wisdom, in that category. Okay, with that background, Amy, let's start with you and let you take the lead. How is it shaping these students to teach them these creative powers at this crucial age?
These creative powers are incredible. I've learned so much myself from listening and studying and pondering these powers. But I think about our youth, and I think it applies to us too, that a lot of times we think of that word power as some type of really strong force, maybe like a sledgehammer, that we just want to whack on the problem and just get it done. And the more power we have, the harder we can whack, and the better it'll be because we're just going to be really doing it. And that power is, and as we start to teach these six creative powers, the students start to learn that there are other tools, not just the sledgehammer, and that there are screwdrivers and drills and levels. And a lot of times we need a different kind of tool to really be effective or to have the kind of impact or to have more precision in what we're doing. And like what you talked about with the synergy, sometimes we need a combination of these tools. And learning about the six creative powers, it just opens up a realm of possibility and even just a new set of language to describe these skills and abilities that some of them already have, and also helping them realize that they have areas of strength and they have areas of weakness and areas where they can improve, and starting to help them see that if they improve in their material power, it will help them in this way. I think about one of the students in our class this last semester. He had one of his main goals was to earn money for college coming up in the fall. And he is a really busy musician and did not have a lot of time. He was teaching piano lessons, but didn't have a lot of time other than that to, you know, be a full-time job because he was working on his project. And now, you know, a couple months ago, he realized, okay, my other stuff is winding down. Now I need to start a business. And so, he wanted to earn money, and he decided that he wanted to create a business. And so this became a huge part of his project, and we used it for a discussion point in our class. And I wanted to share it with you because it was so incredible to see, because we've been studying the six powers. As we got together as a group and we were reviewing these powers, and we were doing it as we were looking at the student's business, and we were looking at all the different powers that he would need and how they would help him. So we were talking about how material power would help him, and what he decided to do was a window washing business. So with material power, he needed to understand spiritual creation. He needed to actually see what his business would look like, the outcomes, who would be involved, all that kind of spiritual creation. And then the other part of material power is he needed to learn how to use the tools, learn how to actually wash windows. Personal power, he's projecting out what he would have to do, that he would have to maintain a good attitude. He, you know, just within himself, that he was going to be going to doors and people would be telling him, no, I don't want you to wash my windows, and he would have to still be happy and move on to the next one. And that also, then that gets into task power, which is actually getting out there and doing it. He's not going to make any money if he didn't actually knock on the doors. And then part of task power, too, is using his time wisely and setting up systems and a schedule for himself, and, you know, even just a way to give estimates to customers and all those kinds of things. Even authority and relationship power. He knew that he needed to find a mentor, somebody who could teach him not only about window washing business, but also about starting a business just in itself. And so he used his relationship power and his positional authority power He used his position as a son to rely on his dad's relationships, and that's how he found a window washing business mentor who has now taken him along and taught him all those things that he needs. And then, of course, there's knowledge power in the actual learning how to wash a window. That was something that his mentor taught him, and it was a really hands-on thing. And also the knowledge of the business he had.
You know, and the knowledge of his clientele.
Oh, yes. Yes, what they need, and yeah, even knowledge of different kinds of windows, different neighborhoods in the town, what different neighborhoods would want. So, yeah, it was really powerful to see how these six creative powers. It's not just because they're in the middle of doing these projects. It's not just a lesson or a principle for them to be taught. It's something that they're applying right now, and for the rest of their lives.
Thank you. And Elodie.
Yes.
How do you think that this is shaping them, that they're learning these powers at this age?
Well, first of all, I think failure is a really important experience. And children need to learn that they need to try no matter what. And I mean children, anyone under the age of 18. They need to try no matter what. They need to have an opportunity to just try. And
are you saying that sometimes they fail?
Oh, absolutely. I would say, yeah. I mean, I had eight students in my class, and I would say every single one of them experienced failure on a regular basis, you know, because they would try something and realize, oh my gosh, that was stupid, that didn't work, and then they'd want to back out, they'd want to say, no, I guess this isn't what I want to do, right? But we had the class that was holding them together and really pressuring them to say, you know, you can do this, you can do this. Okay, that one try didn't work, but let's look at something else. And we'd have to brainstorm and, you know, regroup. And anyway, I think...
Oh, my gosh. I want everyone to savor that moment for a minute because you hit on a couple of things here, Elodie. One of the amazing benefits, It's a side benefit, okay, that comes from this is that the kids are teaching the classes, basically, at least half the classes are the students themselves presenting everything that's happening in their project to the other students, right? And
right.
I have to say, don't you find it amazing that the students aren't jealous? Don't you find it amazing that they are cheering each other on?
Yeah.
And wanting each other's success.
It definitely becomes that. It definitely becomes that. They become so invested in each other's stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when Lacey was trying to raise her money to go to Ecuador, she had a couple of fundraising campaigns that she did online. But most actually of her money, and she raised $4,000 in a year. Most of her money came from she decided to go out on the street in Salt Lake City and street perform. And she could make $120, $150 a day, you know, when she did that. And it just, she was so vulnerable. That just is, it's so scary, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And she, I'll tell you, every single one of her classmates were like, you are amazing. I can't believe you're doing that. You're amazing. You know, and more, as much as they gave her, that gave her so much confidence to keep doing it, you know. And they were so invested, and they would go down and visit her on the street while she would play, and, you know. Anyway,
and be her bodyguards.
Say that again, Amy.
They would be her bodyguards, some of them.
Yeah, they did.
They would, and
they really got they invested in each other, and I loved that. It was just a great, you know, each one of them have their own goal that they're trying to accomplish. You know, I had one kid who was trying with all of his might to get a high enough score in the ACT that he could get accepted to an Ivy League college. He didn't get it. He did get another acceptance, but it was, and that was fantastic. But he didn't get it, and that he had to feel what that felt like. And the other kids were just like, you know what? It's just you. One of the students said to him, "You shot your arrow really. I mean, you put your bar really, really super, super high. And now that you are I mean, he got like a 29 or 30, I think, on the ACT. And now that you got this really great score, in hindsight." You look at it and you think, oh, I didn't reach my goal, but look how high I did reach and all the other possibilities that are available to me.
Wow. I want to talk about the realness of what happens to these kids. That I was visiting someone the other day, and she's a teacher at the junior high here. And she just was saying, our scores in our school are 98%. 98% of these kids are passing. And I said, my goodness, I'm like 98%? That's really, really high. And she looked at me and said, and we're being punished. Our school is being punished because that's not allowed.
Right.
And I said, what are you?
Because it doesn't match the bell curve.
She said, no child can be left behind. It has to be 100%. She said, we're being docked, and no child is allowed to fail. That's just the way that it is. And I just was looking at her. I mean, it took me a minute to catch what she was saying, right? And she was talking about this, and I'm thinking about the kids in this project that we actually allow them to shoot so high, and it means that they can fail. And I want to bring this to a real world situation because of the gift that it gives them to be able to set out on a course and not make it, and then learn the skills it takes to deal with that and to make a more realistic course or to adjust their course or to go, oh, it's because I forgot to employ the mentor, or, oh, it's because I didn't put a group involved and I'm an extrovert and I need to have a group. They learn so much about themselves and about life and can be able to deal with life on a whole new level. Here's the thing. The things that they're learning in this project, they will use year after year after year after year. Amy and Kent and Anelody and I use them. And to give an example, I'm going to get personal here for a second. I don't know however long ago it was. It was a year and a half ago that I had celiac. And it means that I'm basically that my digestive system isn't working, and so I've developed autoimmune to certain foods that make me sick now that normally would be healthy for somebody, right? And so, of course, I had to employ everything I ever have learned about what to do about it. I thought that I had the answer of how to eat that could heal me, right? And spent 6 months, it became the number one season in my life, spent 6 months learning how to eat that way and cook that way and be that way, and then spent the last 18 months eating that way. And 18 months later, this was a few months ago, I said to my husband, I said, Rick, I'm not better. I'm still really sick. Something's wrong with the course that we followed. I mean, it's standing in front of the mirror and saying and being really, really honest with ourselves. And Amy and Elodie, I don't know how many times you make the kids actually stand in front of that mirror and really be honest with themselves about what it is they want and are they getting there and what's blocking them and how can we help them. And besides doing that, you take stock of your life. And so I was taking stock of my life, and I was being really honest and saying, I've had chronic stomach aches since I was 18. There was 1 month during the process that I did was, changed my diet, that
I was out of those stomach aches, and then another month that I did a full-on juice cleanse and I didn't have the stomach aches, but why am I still so sick, right? Like, why is going gluten-free not solving it? And Rick just said, you got to go back to the beginning. You have to start over because you're right. You should be, like, halfway through your healing process, and yet you're still really, really, really sick. So what we ask of these kids, we do in our lives all the time. I had to go back to the drawing board. And you know what? To look back on the last 18 months and think, I followed a path that I thought would work for 18 months and it didn't work, that's excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
That is so painful to say, I've been deceived. I thought the answer was gluten-free. I thought that that's what would heal me. You know,
yeah,
and then to realize...
Can I interject something really important here? The bottom line is our children are going to be living lives just like us. Could you imagine, Tiffany, back, you know, when you were 18 years old, if someone had plopped in front of you the tools to create all these beautiful things in your life and all the problem-solving tools that you needed to be able to implement in your life, and being able to use them as a child or as a youth and be able to live a life with those tools in your hand.
Right. Well, and I do think that when the student is ready that the teacher appears. I do believe that that's happened to all of us in various ways. Does that make sense?
Yes.
As we progress, I mean, equal to our progression. Well, here's the thing. We get the kids going back to the drawing board. Like, the student had to learn how to go back to, okay, I didn't get into the Ivy League. I'm going to start from the beginning. What is it I really want?
Well, and this is the other thing I want to interject here. I was just thinking about the book The Element, and Ken Robinson talks about, and his whole book is about creativity. And just as a side note, I really feel like we do not encourage creativity because we think that in order for us to compete on a worldwide basis, we have to be able to, you know, work in the factories and produce, you know, engineering and all that kind of stuff. We have to be able to be a producing country where, in my opinion, I think we're making a huge mistake because I think so much origination and creation comes from the United States. If we try to change that, we try to squelch creativity, then we really are squelching our national identity. But, you know, that's a different subject. But because we don't foster creativity, sometimes problem-solving becomes so overwhelming because problem-solving is a creative process. And we have, you know, suicides and anxiety and depression and all kinds of mental illnesses because we've made problem solving impossible because we don't teach creativity or do we don't allow creativity. And I was thinking about Ken Robinson, and he talks, you know, in his book The Element, tells a story about this woman who loved science and she decided to become a scientist and spent the years that it took to in school to study and you know get a research position, and she realized she got to the end of all that. She realized she loved science, but she didn't like the community of people who were scientists, and it was a real roadblock for her, almost to the point where she quit. I mean, this was a real roadblock. And she started putting in her head, what can I do differently? And within 5 months was given an opportunity and an invitation to create a humor-based program for youth to teach them science. And so she became really, she said, yeah, I'll take that, I'll see if I can do that. So she started writing these, you know, lessons and then putting them into scripts. And she became a stand-up comedian scientist. And she realized the stand-up comedians were the people she loved hanging out with. And that was really her community. That was her tribe, right? And in his book, The Element, he talks about how important it is to have all of those pieces together for you to really truly be in your element, in your creative place. And so you're sharing this story about, you know, you're trying to figure out your health. It's the same process. It's the same thing. You're going to come to the culminating place where you will find the answers, and it just has to be a process.
That's right, and that's just it. Helping these kids understand this process and being patient with life is really exciting to see what's happening with them. Okay, let's move on to the next question. I want to have time to go over a couple of things with everyone, so I've got a couple more questions here. One of them is the time factor. Can a student do the Edison Project and attend another school or take other classes at the same time, so to speak? That's my question. Amy, why don't you go first?
All right. I really feel like – oh, go ahead.
I was going to add the second question on it. What is the difference between a student who does have 20 hours a week to put into this project versus 1 hour a week?
Yeah.
Because it is possible.
Okay.
We need to say that up front. A student
right.
can take the Edison Project along with everything else they've got planned.
Right. And a lot of times, that's the incredible nature of this project is, and it's really important to know that it's very different from other projects where you're taking, TJYC in your Commonwealth class. Typically, it would not be possible to be taking, you know, several classes at the high school or the college along with TJYC because TJYC is designed for them to be studying so many hours in that every week, and everyone's reading, you know, similar things. Papers are due, and everyone's having discussions on a certain week. And if you weren't able to read the books, you really couldn't be a part of that. So this is a very, very different class because it's all individualized. And so it just depends on what it is that they're supposed to be doing. So, you know, we'll have students who, most students are taking at least one class outside of this Edison Project because they're finding something that is their passion. They're trying to learn, and they're finding their own mentors. And some of those mentors are teaching in schools. And so that's what they're doing. They might be taking an online class. Maybe someone's taking band at the high school or foreign language at the high school. Some students are taking a class or two at the local community college or the local college. They're taking those classes because they're part of their project. And that's the cool thing about this project is that they're, as a class and as mentors, we're helping the students find out their direction. And sometimes
right.
that means taking classes. And sometimes it's classes that they kind of already committed to before they understood the Edison Project, and so now they only have a few hours of free time, and so they don't have as much freedom. But I think about going back to, like, love of learning phase. We know that it's really important that they have this vacuum, or they have this time to make choices. If their whole day is filled, and when they're starting this Edison Project and they only have, you know, an hour a day of free time, there's only so much they can do as far as figuring out the project because they don't have freedom to make those choices. And so the more time they have available, the more freedom they'll have to make those choices. And like Anelody talked about, make the choices, and sometimes you go down the path and it seems like that was a wrong path. But we know that there's a learning that happens on that path. Even if at the end of that road it seems like you didn't get what you wanted, we know that they learn in that process, and they need time for that to happen. And that's one of the incredible things about this Edison Project is we're helping parents to see that they can give their students, their children, the gift of time, giving them a year to 2 years to really be able to have an incredible self-directed scholar phase, so that they're going to be ready to go into their mentor and scholar phase. So they're going to be ready to be fully mentored again, but be in a place where they can go to full-time college and their time is all taken up again. But this is a time in their life when they have this freedom and they have the time to discover and go and try something that they've always wanted to try. This is the time to do it.
Can I mention here, and if you don't mind, give me the time. This is why the training for this. Okay, first of all, it's a completely different. It's a paradigm shift that we've been trying to get our mentors to kind of move into this direction for a long time, and we lose a lot of mentors because they can't get the vision of this. But let me tell you, it's really important that a mentor become a maven, collecting information, so that when you have a student who comes to your project, the Edison Project, and says to you, I want to go to an Ivy League school. That's my goal. You know, they're 15 years old, and it's not too late. They can get started on that track. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they know that's what they need to do. That a mentor can sit down with parents and a student and talk about what it would take for that student to get to an Ivy League school, what track they could get on. So the Edison Project class becomes an opportunity for them to share with their peers what they're doing, but outside, they're probably going to some kind of intensive, you know, school. I was just I went to a conference this a couple of months ago that was fantastic, and it gave a whole list of open courseware materials. And you can actually I just want to read this to you really quickly. It says the open courseware is courseware that's available online, and it's typically offered by universities, colleges. And it says MIT has perhaps the most well-known open courseware project known to date. Okay, MIT. Do you realize that your children can go to MIT at the age of 15, take all the classes for free, and they have to pass, obviously, you know, and get credit, college credit for it? We have so much technology available to us. So if I have a student who really wants to get into, you know, technology and that kind of stuff, we could go to the open courseware and create a whole college course for him or her, you know, over the next 4 years and be getting college credit at MIT. And would that get them into, I mean, that's pretty much an Ivy League there. But Yale has open courseware. Berkeley has open courseware. UVU. there are so many colleges that have open courseware. So as a mentor, you need to really be open to finding paths for each one of these students. You know, my daughter wanted to go to Ecuador, and she wanted to learn Spanish, and she had to earn the money. We had to figure out a way for her to have a meaningful Spanish experience, you know, so that she could actually speak the language when she went to Ecuador. So, you know, we had to really brainstorm how is the most meaningful way for her to learn Spanish. Anyway, I just think that...
Excellent.
I just think that if we will open our minds to what the possibilities are, and that's our biggest problem as mentors, is really opening our minds to possibilities. We have been not taught to do that on even though many of us have the heart for it, we have not been taught to do it.
Yeah, and helping the students see some of those possibilities, and, you know, maybe helping to introduce them to other people who have followed different paths, or look, you could try this. And that's one of the power of having the class, because then it's like infectious, this energy and these ideas. One student is like, oh, I'm doing this course. Oh, that's really cool. Another person is, I'm doing this. And they start to see all these great options.
Right. I want to add here that the students aren't just left with an open page of how to create these things. We give them detailed tools.
Right.
One of the things we give them is their self-directed plan worksheet. And this is just one of the tools that we give them where they name one of their objectives. We have a whole self-directed scholar project that was created by one of our teachers
Jamie Quisenberry, and she takes students to Kenya. So if they want to have their self-directed plan be part of their Kenya trip, this is an example. I want to give you some details here just as our last thing, and then we might have time for one question, maybe two. So they list an objective. This student was to create a plan for earning my money for Kenya, okay? And then the next category is resources to learn from. Their resources were to read entrepreneur books because they needed to earn their money. They listed their parents as their resource, and they needed to learn about fundraising. Okay, so they kind of wrote down these different things. They had some specific goals. One was to decide what business they wanted to create, and they also had the goal that week to get counsel from their parents. We have something in this project called performance. And that's the thing that can be shown. It's not easy to understand the concept of performance, but for this one, their performance was actually the creation of their business. So to create my business is my performance. The next category is becoming. And they wrote, I will become an entrepreneur. I will learn to know what I have control over and how to focus correctly, increasing my performance. They have due dates. So they said, I want to have a business plan. On Wednesday, I'm going to create my business plan. On Thursday, I'm going to show it to my parents. On Friday, I'm going to make adjustments. And then as far as adjustments go from the week before, they didn't have any yet. Then we have a category called self or group description. So they have their group where they met each month online for their class with all the other kids who are going to Kenya. Their self was to take responsibility for earning their money. Now, just teaching the students to think about one of their resources being self or group. Some great learning environments include others. Sometimes they create opportunities. Basically, the students take the responsibility to know if they can reach their objective just using themselves or if they actually have to create a group. These are just some specifics so that you know that none of this is open-ended. I mean, a lot of it is open-ended as far as how the scope of their project, but the details of how to create aren't open-ended. These are actually tools that work, and that's what's been amazing. And Ellie and Amy, do you think we can open this up for just a couple of questions?
Yeah, I think we should.
Okay. The other thing, well, I wanted to share a little bit about some of those projects. Can we take a couple minutes and just, I know Ellie's shared and I've shared a little bit. I just feel like we should help people to see that there's so much diversity in what these students are doing. Not all of them are working toward college scholarships. I think most of them are working toward college in some way, but some have other goals, like Anality was saying with Ecuador. I mean, some students worked really hard this past year in learning how to make nutritional meals. Learning an instrument, learning how to sew, I had one student this year who was working in his job. He was kind of doing some apprentice work in learning how different kinds of construction skills, and I mean incredible kinds of things, and really, really diverse. It's not all one way. And then they're also doing a lot of liberal arts study along the way. It's not just only working on projects. They're also continuing to read and study and write and discuss those ideas as they, you know, these epiphanies that they have and these things they're learning, because they're scholars and that's part of them. And they continue that throughout their projects, just like we do as adults. That's really what we're helping them do. They're transitioning to the adults.
I love it. Thank you. Okay, if I remember right, then I think you pressed.
Can I just make one more comment?
Yeah.
I want to reiterate something that Amy said, was that many of these kids really are continuing in their liberal arts. You know, we are using some examples like travel and preparing to take the ACT. I do want to mention that my daughter, even though she was trying to get to Ecuador and trying to get a great scholarship, a music scholarship, and trying to, you know, get a good score on the ACT so she could get into the college, had a whole schedule of liberal arts learning that she was doing on, in addition to trying to reach those goals, because she understood how important her liberal arts education was. So I just want to add that.
Yeah, and they start to see, you know, especially if they're coming from PGYC, they have so many books and areas where they want to learn. And so they can be guided by their mentor and say, oh, you know, I want to learn more about science. I've been wanting to study about physics and I just haven't had the time to do it. And I just really think this is the time that I can study it. And okay, great. Let's find these classics. Let's get you a mentor and go with it.
Right, and then they can use their, they can either create a class that they're trying to, you know, that will help them to, you know, be accountable for their readings that they're doing in that science, or they can just use the Edison class to report to.
Right. Yeah, it's very flexible.
Okay, before we take a question, I do need to announce that we're offering early bird pricing on this project, because we didn't have it available before the early bird deadline. So for all of your schools, if you want to send mentors to get trained at the Salt Lake Training, that's where we're offering it this year. Registration opens up today, and it will be first registered, first get the slots. And you do get early bird pricing on this project. You just have to type in the code Edison. And it will tell you right on there what you have to do to get the early bird pricing. So that's good news. I think you can press either 5-star or 4-star, and then I can unmute your line if there's someone who has a question. So let's see if anyone does.
5-star.
Okay, 5-star. And this question's about this particular project. We might not have any questions, we do. Here's a question. Jennifer, you're first.
Okay. You know, we're building our community here in Tulsa. This is just beginnings for us, but this project sounds really, really great for the youth. I'm wondering, though, for the adults, is this something that could potentially be taught on an adult level?
Absolutely. You could do this project as part of your library community series for adults. So someone can come get trained and then invite any adults that want to do it, and it will be life-changing to the adults.
I have to tell you,
nothing
this is
about
actually,
this project that can't be done with them.
It was actually one of my adult projects that made me really embrace the whole Edison. That's why we made the Edison thing. We were able to make it. I had a club called the Inklings, and you know, it was our adult project. And basically, we studied most of this kind of stuff. And I think it would be fantastic for adults to start this.
Yeah, what a good idea, Jennifer. I love it.
Okay,
Genevieve. Did you have another question, Jennifer?
No, thanks.
Okay, perfect. Genevieve, you're next.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
I was just wondering if you could tell us what a class session would look like.
Okay, so what a typical class looks like?
Yes.
Okay, the first month will look different than the whole rest of the year, because the first month, first 6 weeks, you're helping them create their projects. But after that, typically what happens each week is students get to teach. So they come, depending on how small or how large a class is. If you have 3 students, then each of them are going to be presenting almost each week. If you have a class of 12, they may only be able to present once a month. But the students get to create a PowerPoint with pictures of their project, and they get to come, and they get to share, they get to brainstorm together, and they're reporting So it's amazing because if you have a student who's taking off in, say, the fine arts, all of the other students are learning about the fine arts because that student's reporting the details of their project and how they're growing and how they're changing and what they're learning and what their struggles are. If you have a student who's going into a completely different area, maybe it's business, they're coming back to reporting the principles they learned, the books that they read, the stuff that they did. That's one of the things that a class looks like. The other thing
and typically,
is
typically on those days, you know, when we have presentations, so I would have like, I had 8 students. I would have at least 2 presentations every week, and they would easily take up the 2 hours. But we would start the class typically with some kind of a TED Talk or some kind of a inspirational whatever that, you know, we found
as
mentors.
That's what I was saying, is you as a teacher, you keep your ears to the ground with the TED Talks. So you're going through TED Talks and you're getting inspired. Oh my gosh, I've got students who really need to hear this TED Talk, and you bring it to class. You're not.
Yeah, and it's a lot better. It's a lot better than. I mean, they have to have some kind of content that they're sharing. So if they're, let's say they're watching a TED Talk on the most recent one I loved so much is called Hack Schooling, and so this kid, he's talking about his experience of hack schooling. His mom and dad took him out of school when he was 12, and for the last 2 years he's just been hack schooling, and he explains what that is. And so then it gives you content to have discussion. So they have discussion, and then they have.
And then the other element that's involved in each class is that each month you're focusing on one of the powers. So you as a mentor, you really... See, Melody and I, the 7 creative powers are original for Melody and I, and you have a lot of our conference calls to listen to and to pull from. But Melody and I studied anywhere from 2 to 50 books per call for content. In other words, if we're teaching task power, we have 2 or 3, maybe 4 different conference calls that we teach different elements of task power, right? Like how your seasons and chunky and task power. We do have different things. So you have that to pull from. But when Melody and I gave that content, she and I both studied usually 2 to 5 to 10 books just to be able to pull that out. And so you are learning everything you can about these powers. And that's where your lectures come from, because then you teach these kids about these powers and about how to implement them in their life. That's one of your focuses of study as a mentor, plus you're learning how to mentor on a whole new level, and we have defined some of those specific mentoring skills that you need at this type of mentoring that we'll go over with you with training. But
yeah, let me tell you, there are different environments of mentoring. One of them is coaching, remember. You're going to be doing a lot more coaching than you ever have been doing as mentors.
That's right.
Would you not agree, Amy?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You're doing it, and then you're having private mentor meetings with them also, in which that is just full coaching. But even when you're in a class situation, the other students learn a ton as they see you coach one student through this roadblock that they're having. Yeah,
yeah.
It's powerful.
Coaching is like one of the highest environments that you're creating in this environment, in this project.
Yeah, so basically every class period, there's a time where they're each having some accountability, where they're reporting on what they're doing, and then there's some formal presentations, and then there's teaching of principles, but it's really more presenting these principles to facilitate discussion and coaching, like Anelia was saying.
Excellent. Genevieve, does that answer your question?
Yes.
Okay.
I want to make it really, 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 really clear. I was speaking to somebody the other day who was calling these people that he has working for him doing assignments with these people. He was calling them mentors, and I said, how can you call them mentors? Do they create all the environments that a mentor creates? And, you know, I was telling him the different environments and the different roles that a mentor plays. And he was like, oh, wow, I never even thought about that. And the thing is, if you're a coach, you're a coach. That's awesome. Call me a coach. If you're a therapist, great. Call me a therapist. If you're a facilitator, call me a facilitator. But a mentor has many roles, and they need to be creating all of those environments and playing all of those roles at some different time. A Key of Liberty mentor is creating an environment where the student is being taught how to listen to a lecture, 20-minute lecture. That is a really important environment for them. And then a Key of Liberty mentor is facilitating the skills and abilities. So they're spending less time coaching, more time facilitating and lecturing. You know, and each one of our mentors spend a little bit different time in different places. But this for me, it's the most exciting because I get to do a lot of coaching. And I love coaching. One-on-one is fantastic.
Thank you. Okay, we have two more people with their hands raised. Let's go to Brandy next.
My question, I think, was mostly answered by the previous call, and it was that sounds like there's a general outline for the day, but it's not a set class because you said it's individualized, so it could be any variety. There's no one topic like World War or Civil War. It's all
the answer is yes and no, because you're teaching a lot of skills and abilities in this one. So the topic here is actually how to do self-directed projects. Okay?
Yes.
And then there's a lot of variety, like what you're saying, there's not necessarily one topic outside of that. It's true. And there is a lot more room for there's a lot more movement in this. It's true. You're not just coming with, okay, I'm teaching this, and then I'm doing this, and then I'm doing this. And there's more movement. It's more fluid.
Let me give you an example. One of our students came to class, and he said, my presentation today is going to be on, I can't remember the exact name he gave it, but basically it was the emotional cycle that we go through to make a decision that he had learned in his in the process of trying to figure out what he was going to do with his life. And he had been going to a therapist, and the therapist taught him this cycle. So, you know, he took probably half an hour to teach us this cycle, and we spent easily a half an hour talking about it, what he had learned. So these kids really literally are teaching the class with what they're learning.
Very good. Does that answer your question, Brandy?
Yes, thank you.
And as a mentor, it gave me a lot of peace in teaching it for the first time and getting mentored by Tiffany and Anality, in that there was the framework for the six creative powers, because we had, once they had their projects created, then we had basically, okay, this month, you know, we are going to use this for springboard for discussion. Personal power. We're going to focus on personal power. I was studying about personal power, looking up TED Talks, having quotes from books, examples from books, and so I knew that there was material for discussion, because there are some weeks when their presentations don't lead you to discussion.
Yeah.
Like another example. So that you do have to be ready for having some discussions like that, and you do have the framework of the six creative powers, but the awesome thing is that it doesn't, if there's a student who has that kind of presentation, and we had amazing ones, same kind of thing. One time a student wanted to share about mercy and what she had learned about mercy and how it applied, and these several different books she had read, and these concepts she had learned, and then the class just went on with that discussion. So it's both, and it seems kind of, but it really, as a mentor, it didn't feel stressful or just like totally open every week. What am I going to do now? No, it was really clear, because it's like, okay, we're on personal power. We're going to move forward. I have this great, great video and this great PowerPoint that I've created to help teach some concepts on personal power, on, you know, owning your own state, and then we could ask these questions, but then you're open to being a mentor in your class.
Right. And I,
what they need.
Thank you for bringing that up, because even though, I just want to make it really clear, there are weeks that you will come together and kids just are not able to report. They just don't have anything ready to report, whatever. And they're going to, it's so dependent on them, you know. So that's when I really get excited about coaching. And as a mentor, I can say, okay, this is my perfect time to coach. And I'm, you know,
yeah,
that's when I'll take the kids to, you know, I'll choose one or two of the students and say, okay, let's have a coaching session. And they'll get to, I'll just say, I'm going to allow all of these other students here to observe us having a coaching session. And, you know, it's kind of a, it can be a personal thing, and we have to ask emotional permission and all that kind of stuff. And I have students who aren't ready to do that. But then I have, you know,
right,
kids are much more open and resilient than we are to that kind of stuff. So
yes.
Excellent.
All right, we have one more question. Camille.
My question,
oh,
can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, and then
okay.
I did notice we do have one more question after you, Camille.
My question stems not so much from the standpoint of being a mentor for the class, but being a parent of a class, you know, someone who's taking this class, a student that's taking the class. I have a son who had an opportunity to take this class, and because of various circumstances, and I think primarily because he didn't see the vision, and I was not able to help him see the vision of how that could serve him, he ended up not taking the class. He's still, you know, floundering, being angsty about what he doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know where he's going. So I'm wondering, with this, I guess it's twofold. How do we help them see the value in this? And also, is there any kind of guidance or coaching given to the parents of students in the class so that they know how most effectively to help the student? Because my son's whole take on it was always, well, if it's self-directed, why do I need direction? Why do I need to ask? You know what? I was so frustrated, and I didn't know how to help him.
I'm so glad you brought this up, because we didn't have that implemented that year. And Amy and Ellie and I have been talking about what we can do as the mentor, once the mentor gets trained, and how they can have a session with the parent. And I think we need to just make it mandatory that there's like a two-hour training that the mentor gives the parents, especially in all of the documents, going through each of the documents that we train them in. I think something like that would really help, and that's what we've been discussing having. I'm really glad you brought this up. Amy, you think that would help tremendously, don't you?
I do. And just like, you know, our oldest children get to be guinea pigs, and, you know, the poor children in our community got to be guinea pigs as we floundered with trying to, you know, make this project work as we're still piloting it. And, I mean, we already learned so much more this year than the year before, and it just gets better every time. And so I think those kinds of comments like you're making, Camille, it's really good to be aware of that. And I really do think we've come up with some ways to help the parents know how, because they are a huge part of this coaching process, because they are, in most cases, the parents are doing as much coaching as the mentors are, because there's so, it's just such a crucial time, and it's so time consuming, and they have so many questions. And in any given week, they'll go, I mean, you know, if you have teenagers this age, they will go from, yes, I totally want to do this, to 3 days later, that's the worst thing I've ever heard in my whole life. I would never do that.
So true. It's a little mercurial, don't you think?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
I'll tell you, one of my favorite things on our parent mentor, the document that we created for them, I love this, that each week the student answers this to the parent. It's the last thing on the form that, and they're supposed to have this meeting with their parent every week. It says, do I feel heard, loved, and understood by my parents? And so here you are, you know, here I am with my child because my daughter went through this too. And I get to ask her, do you feel heard, loved, and understood by me? I mean, every week. The one before that that I get asked.
And my son would answer that no every single week.
Oh, and then you're like there for another half hour, right?
Yeah, yes. Then, okay. So as a parent, I'm doing something wrong, apparently.
This other one is things I need from my parents this week. I mean, we get that specific. You know, I say, Laura, what is, and, you know, some of her answers were, Mom, I need paint with this, you know, it's this yellow paint. It's called Amber. It's got this number. It costs $18. You know? And I'm like, check. We've got to go to Idaho Falls. We have to go to Michael's. I have to print off a coupon. So I only pay $9. Okay, got it. You need that color paint. You know? I mean, they it's huge. So, Camille, yes, you're part of the piloting program. And, you know, we lament, Amy and I, we talk about the students that didn't see the potential of this and chose not to do it. And we understand and we think about your son and we care about him very deeply. And we know your feelings for him and your anxiousness to have him succeed and to not flounder and to feel like he's got purpose. We really hope that this will help that we can help train the parents.
Can I mention something here? Just because a student, I really liked her son said, well, if it's subjective, why do I need a mentor? In my opinion, there's never a time in my life I don't need a mentor.
Yeah,
and I'm self-directed a lot. It's just a misnomer about what mentoring is.
Yeah.
We use mentors for different kinds of things.
Yeah. And this is a different kind of class, and that's what it's really hard to explain that to students, especially when they've been through TJYC where they know, okay, you have to remember you've got the initiative and submission. I know you know that, Camille. But these apprentice scholar classes are so heavy on the submission, and when they're transitioning to be self-directed scholars, they are ready to move back to the initiative part, and they feel that. And a lot of times you feel it at the end of TJYC3, they are like busting to get out of there and do their own thing and follow their own path. And I mean, you feel they're like,
sometimes they bust out before that.
Sometimes they do. They're like, forget the simulation. But they, you know, they are just, they have the stack of books they want to read and they want to go and they want to do. And they're like, what? Another class? You told me it's over and now I got to take another class and that teacher, they're going to give me stuff to do and I have this other stuff I want to do. And so it's part of it is us being able to communicate to parents and to students that this is a totally different paradigm and we're not going to be giving them a stack of things to do except at the very beginning, like you said, those 6 weeks where they're creating the project, we're going to give them some tools to help them do that that will take time. But then once they do the project, they have their time. It's theirs. We're not taking it out by giving them assignments. When we say TED Talks, they're not doing it for homework. We're not assigning the class homework. They're coming to class and they're discussing it. We might show them in class, but we don't want to give them homework as a class because they've got their own project.
Right.
That's amazing. Okay, let's take this last question. Your number ends in 9124. Okay, who is this?
Yes, this is Anne. I came on the call super late. So will you be having it recorded that we can listen to the complete call?
Yes. Just email us and Rick will tell you how to get on the recording.
Okay.
So office Lemmy at Gmail.
Okay, and that will be available later today or next?
He tries to make it available either today or by Monday. I can tell him that you want to, if you email him this morning, then I can tell him to get on and answer your email.
Okay.
Get it to you. Okay, we've got another question that popped up. Thanks. Thank you. I'm glad that you asked that. Okay, we've got someone, 8864.
Hi, my name's Shelley. I'm in Colorado. And
hi.
I wanted to know if someone wants to take this project training in Salt Lake this summer, what are the requirements beforehand, like reading and all that? Is that going to be on your website, or can you just tell us?
Yep, it is, and I can tell you some of what I know already. There's, you'll want to listen to two of the classic calls on the creative power. So you're going to listen to the
creative
one.
Creative power. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the one about task power and seasons, and then you get to pick another one you have to listen to. So listen to at least two of those.
And let me tell you, we are in the middle of creating this training. So we
right.
aren't exactly we're not exactly sure that we can give you a list of readings because it might be like super intense and it you know you may have to just apply yourself throughout the year. But I will tell you the training will be super intense on teaching you how to become how to implement all of the environments of a mentor.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We were trying to, and Amy, did we ever figure out the name of that book that we were, that escaped both of our minds that we wanted
to
read?
Oh, The Fearless Mind.
That's it, The Fearless Mind. That's one of the books that if you can get a hold of and read before you come. If not, we're still going to teach you the principles from that one.
And I recommend The Element.
Yes.
Yep,
yes.
And The Element. That's what you have to do before you come. The Element,
okay.
Two of the... powers and Fearless Mind.
And you said that
okay.
The two of the powers are on that CD that says, you know, the classic calls?
No, it's not the classic call.
It's
oh.
The six creative powers. It's normally $99 to buy it, but we're giving everybody $70 off. You can buy the whole CD for $30 on our website.
Oh, okay. Okay,
and
I'll try and find that today.
Okay, email us if the code isn't in there yet to give you, because I know that when you register, I'm not sure how to give you the code so you get that off. I have them
okay.
in the room. So email us if it's not just right there that tells you how to get it for that.
So anyone can order that or only if you sign up to teach the Edison Project?
No, right now we're just going to make it so anyone can order at that price right now.
Okay.
Right. And it will last about a month.
Okay.
But it's $50 off.
And I would just like to say I've been studying Brené Brown's books and things for about 2 years pretty intensively, and I love her. She teaches us so much.
I know.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye. All right, that's it. This is good. First of all, Amy and Melody, thank you for being on here with us. And everyone, thank you for taking your time to come on. Please let your communities know what's going on. And if they want to listen to this call, it should be on the front page of our website. We should be getting it up today. So.
Very good. Thank you all.
All right.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye.
Take care. See everybody at training. Bye-bye.